Okay, this motion is as follows. Defend our democracy, our standards, and our health service. Say no to TTIP. I propose that the Progressive Unionist Party of Northern Ireland should on this day enshrine in policy its resolution to oppose the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, TTIP. Ladies and gentlemen, delegates, fellow Progressive Unionists, the resolution I have tabled today concerns TTIP. This stands for the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. TTIP is a series of trade agreements currently being finalised between the European Union and the United States. An agreement which we are told is to set up avenues of business between Europe and America. So what's wrong with that, you might well say. After all, as a party, we're not anti-business by any means. The problem, delegates, is that whilst proponents of TTIP claim it will generate trade and investment, the reality is that many, including organisations such as War on Want, the Global Development and Environment Institute, and Patients for NHS.org, believe that it will degrade safety standards, lead to job losses, legitimise unaccountable kangaroo courts, and infringe heavily upon the democracy and the privacy of citizens. It would bring the most naked, damaging violation of the sovereignty of this United Kingdom seen in many years. The first point I'd like to raise is the harmonisation of regulations. TTIP seeks to align safety standards and practices here in the UK with those of the United States. In this country, safety standards are of a much higher standard than those in the US. As highlighted in an article published in The Independent entitled What is TTIP? 70% of all processed foods sold in US supermarkets now contain genetically modified ingredients. By contrast, the EU allows virtually no GM foods. The US also has far laxer restrictions on the use of pesticides. It also has growth hormones in its beef, which are restricted in Europe due to its links to cancer. US farmers have tried to have these restrictions lifted repeatedly in the past through the World Trade Organization, and it is likely that they would use TTIP to do so again. The same goes for the environment, where the EU's regulations are far tougher on potentially toxic substances. In Europe, a company has to prove a substance is safe before it can be used. In the US, the opposite is true. Any substance can be used until it is proven unsafe. As an example, the EU currently bans 1,200 substances from use in cosmetics. The US, just 12. TTIP would lead to job losses in the UK and in the EU. The EU has admitted that TTIP will probably cause unemployment as jobs switch to the US, and have even hinted at support funds to compensate for it. I would suspect, of course, that such compensation would make several shrinking rounds of stops before arrival at any of the UK households that would be crippled by their loss of income. Jeronim Capaldo of Tufts University, Medford, USA, has published a paper for the Global Development and Environment Institute entitled The Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, European Disintegration, Unemployment and Instability. Capaldo opens his report by explaining the underlying logic is the same as in all traditional liberalisations, reducing the costs of trade, whether eliminating tariffs or other impediments, is supposed to lead to higher trade volume and overall economic benefit. Unfortunately, experience has shown that this appealing reasoning is often misleading. Using the United Nations Global Policy Model, we simulated the impact of TTIP. We find that TTIP would lead to net losses in terms of GDP, personal incomes, and employment in the EU. In particular, we project that labour incomes will decrease between 165 euros and 5,000 euros per worker, depending on the country. We also project a loss of approximately 600,000 jobs, a continuing downward trend of the labour share, and potentially destabilising dynamics in asset prices. For me, the most frightening aspect of TTIP is the threat it poses to democracy. TTIP would put in place, and Peter Bunting has already mentioned this earlier on today, it would put in place unaccountable secret courts. These are known as Investor State Dispute Settlements, ISDS, and are an extremely undemocratic process, whereby a team of corporate lawyers are appointed to hear a case between a corporate organisation and a government. These mechanisms would have no accountability, and given their corporate makeup, have very little inclination to be impartial. They are for the purposes of overriding democracy, and they pose the greatest threat to the public services of this United Kingdom, including our NHS, certainly in my lifetime. Consider a scenario. A local council, democratically elected by the community, takes a decision to end the use of a product manufactured and sold by an American-owned multinational company. Perhaps because that product has been less than impressive, or perhaps that product has been proven to be dangerous or of poor quality. That American multinational then sues that local council in a sham corporate court, which is unaccountable, unrepresentative, and wins, as it would. That loss of money is your child's playground, your local clinic, or your spouse's job. Sounds a bit far-fetched, doesn't it? Sounds like I'm scaremongering, perhaps. John Hillary, the Executive Director of Moral Want, has 20 years of experience working in the issues of trade, investment and globalisation. He delivers us the following chilling warnings. Philip Morris, an international tobacco company, is currently suing the Australian government for its legislation insisting that cigarettes be sold only in plain packaging, a policy intended to reduce the number of young people who take up smoking. Violex, a French company, is currently suing the government of Egypt for raising its minimum wage, a policy intended to combat poverty. Achmea, a Dutch company, has already successfully sued the government of Slovakia for reversing a very unpopular health privatisation bill. In addition, with patientsfornhs.org, which has revealed from its research that the American company Renko has sued the government of Peru for $800 million because its contract was not extended. Its contract wasn't extended after the company's lead smelting operations caused massive environmental and health damage. All of these attacks on democracy have been launched through ISDS courts, the kind of which David Cameron would like to expose our NHS. Delegates, in preparing this resolution, the most sinister thing of all became apparent. All of the sources, research papers and articles I gathered gained their information via leaks or freedom of information requests. The secrecy of our government on this trade agreement is the most disturbing consideration by far. My primary concern is for the safeguarding of our National Health Service. It is a public service the people of this United Kingdom can ill afford to lose, and the very thought that it could be forced to consider some American sales figures ahead of what is best for your child or your spouse or your grandparents' health doesn't bear thinking about. The idea that our NHS might fall completely into private hands, leading to your child's exclusion from the A&E ward due to your lack of a credit card, doesn't bear thinking about. The French government has shielded its national film industry from TTIP, and if he so desired, the Prime Minister could do the same for our NHS. But he has no inclination to do so. You see, the reality is, David Cameron is rich. He doesn't need the NHS. The people on my street aren't, and do. A further warning which has been highlighted by the What is TTIP article published in The Independent reminds us of ACTA, the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. This was a proposal presented before the European Parliament in 2012, which would have looked like something out of George Orwell's novel 1984. It demanded that internet service providers keep tabs on every individual's online activity. It didn't provide them with the option, it actually ordered them to. Haven't they clocked for the obscene invasion of personal freedom that it was, the European Parliament rejected it overwhelmingly? It could be brought back. Indeed, this is yet another way in which TTIP could be used to bypass democracy. An easing of data privacy laws and a restriction of public access to pharmaceutical companies' clinical trials are also thought to be on the cards. I commend the other Northern Irish parties that have already resolved to oppose TTIP, the DUP and Sinn Féin among them. Well done. I won't play politics with this issue. This is something we should all work together on. Although I personally know for a fact that our party hasn't got the credit it deserves in such campaigns. But anyhow, moving on. Let the Progressive Unionist Party add its voice to the great many already demanding that David Cameron do the right thing. For most of my political journey, I have been pro-European. I like the idea of a European Union, a forum where nations can clash over a table. Because the way I see it, better to clash over a table than on a battlefield. Better to fire arguments than to fire missiles. I always cherished the idea of being in a referendum on the UK's membership of the EU so that I could register my support for it, so that I could vote in. But someone recently asked me, what would change your mind, William? What would make you a Eurosceptic? Honestly, this would. This probably would. So to those who would have us leave our safety standards vulnerable to compromise, our democracy overridden, and our public services left to the mercy of profiteers, to those who would threaten our jobs, and to those who would threaten our privacy, let the Progressive Unionist Party of Northern Ireland say no surrender. Fellow Progressive Unionists, I implore you to support this resolution. Thank you.
I'm standing here today to present the motion which is aimed at dealing with specific types of cybercrime. I'm not the most technology-savvy person in the world, and technology develops and advances at such a rapid rate that it's hard to keep on top of the latest phones, tablets, programmes and apps that are constantly being churned out. Every week there seems to be something new that you can install into your phone or tablet that promises to keep you more connected with your friends, families, colleagues, that was on the offer the week before. What I and others have noticed is that the same cannot be said about the pace at which protective legislation develops up. There's a huge discrepancy between the two, particularly with regards to social media. Apps such as Snapchat, WhatsApp and Facebook are all there to encourage us to share more online with which people consider friends. We choose who we directly send things to, as there are basic privacy settings available on most social media platforms. But what happens with our information or images once we've shared them? And because you've shared it with one person, it is okay for them to share with that with others. This motion focuses exclusively on a specific type of cybercrime which has surfaced due to the sharing of an individual's private material on a public forum by someone else without their informed consent. A recent case of this happening in Northern Ireland involves a 22-year-old female from West Belfast and a 26-year-old male from North Belfast. The two were in a turbulent relationship that eventually, due to the controlling and abusive behaviour of the 26-year-old male, and as you can imagine, the young man wasn't pleased. He told her that he had made a secret video of them having sex and that he was going to upload them onto the internet, along with her address and other personal information, to publicly shame her for ending the abusive relationship. The girl was at university at the time and she became absolutely distraught over the fact that someone she had trusted and been with since she was a teenager could do this to her. The first thing she did was call the police, and she was told by the PSNI that there were no grounds to arrest him. She reported the incident to the police and they said they could do nothing about it except offer her a non-molestation order. The young woman ended up applying for legal aid to launch court action against her ex-partner, as that was the only option she had. She won. Good. It was the only option she had because we do not have adequate laws here to deal with this type of criminality, despite the fact that there are a few new cases like this happening every day across the country. Not everyone is as lucky or as that young woman was with regards to the outcome of what happened. A mentally ill, vulnerable 17-year-old from Tyrone thought he was sending images of himself to a girl he met online, the same age as him. As it turns out, the 17-year-old girl was actually a gang of online criminals from Nigeria who threatened to post the private images the boy sent to them on his Facebook page, where his friends, family and the world would see them without his consent. Blackmail, manipulation and control is a common theme within cybercrime, and those online criminals were looking to extort thousands of pounds from a Northern Irish teenager. The teenager in question confided in his parents and reported what happened to the police. Unfortunately, the PSNI said there wasn't much that they could do, and the young lad actually committed suicide days later because he was absolutely haunted by the fact that someone would make his images public. The reason I mention the PSNI so much is that there are no legal framework in place that our police can follow to deal with these specific types of crimes quickly and effectively. The only option people in this country have is to launch a court action against the perpetrator, so it becomes the responsibility of the victim to bring about any kind of justice. Legal action is the only option in Northern Ireland that people in Northern Ireland have, but it's not the only option for the citizens of England and Wales. In February 2015, it was announced that the Criminal Justice and Courts Act 2015, which has a specific amendment dealing with such actions, has received royal assent. The Act is now law in England and Wales, and offenders face up to 2 years in jail. Section 33 of the Act makes it an offence to disclose private sexual photographs and films without the consent of the individual depicted and with the intent to cause distress. Yet such laws have yet to be extended to Northern Ireland, as our Justice Minister is considering whether the current law is adequate to deal with the problem of cybercrime. I feel that not wanting to create, implement or extend positive legislation changes that would protect the citizens of Northern Ireland is an affront to the principles of loyalism, which can be backed up by the document itself. Anything that militates against the ability of the government and civic society to watch over, promote and protect the morale and the welfare of the people of Northern Ireland is subversive of the well-being of the people of Northern Ireland and must be opposed by all genuine loyalists. I think it's fair to say that everyone in this room sees themselves as an active British citizen. The principle of loyalism tells us that's what we should be. Instead of British subjects, we should be demanding equal citizenships within the UK. And right now, we aren't getting it. With this motion, I'm not asking for anything that isn't already available to other British citizens. Are the rights of our people less important? Should we be less protected? It is our duty to empower ordinary people in their endeavours to reach their full potential as human beings. Any policy or proposed policy that militates against the empowerment of the individual is contrary to the principles of the Progressive Unionist Party. So I believe that if there is legislation available that can offer us more protection as a people, we should be actively trying to get it. Thank you for your time.